support Bob Dugas, who works there, also with Dr. Sharp. And so we're very blessed to have Dr. Jackson come. As I told you all during the Sunday School Hour, I've been a part of a cadre, which meets twice a year down in Noble. And Dr. Jackson and Dr. Sharp teach us different aspects of creationism from a biblical perspective, and looking at both biblical and scientific evidence in favor of this. So it's been a fascinating opportunity for me to get to know Dr. Jackson. And so now it's our privilege to have him come and talk about a message I heard him give in one of the cadres on the origin of life. And I know that you'll be blessed and your faith will be blessed, and they'll also gain depth and assurance that what the Bible says is absolutely true. So it's great to have you again, Dr. Jackson. Please come and speak to us.
Hi, mic is live. Yeah, I'm glad they turned it off in between services. Okay. I taught junior high for 2 years, and sensitive when someone sneaks up like that. Just radar goes up, teacher radar. Okay. Bareshit bara Elohim et hashamayim va'et ha'aretz. The King James translation says, "In the beginning God created the heaven and the earth." Now, how many ever heard of prehistoric times? How many ever heard of? Yeah, I'm a teacher. Raise your hand. How many ever heard of prehistoric times? Okay, there's no such thing. This is a history book, if it's nothing else. And, of course, it is far more. And this history book starts when? In the beginning. The first three words are in the beginning. There's no such thing as prehistoric times. This book starts at the start, which, as Fräulein Maria said, is a very good place to start, okay, if you're a Sound of Music fan. I am talking, actually, I had one of my little Mensa moment mind slips and didn't bring my presentation with me, but luckily, my stepson says I'm like Mr. Magoo. Well, Bob here is like Radar O'Reilly. And he actually had one of my presentations. It actually happens to be Brother Allen, the presentation that you wanted me to give, and I didn't want to. So there it is. It's the cadre presentation. And don't worry, guys. You just take your time, because I'm going to warm up to get to it. Oh, there it is. Yeah. We want to do that one first. It's the one I want to do first. And then I'll back up. I got my remote. I'll be good once they get started there. So many of the songs, of course, were designed to be what I wanted to talk about, and there's so many. And also the verse that the guy who read the scriptures, too. But I want to take a look in Isaiah 42. Isaiah 42. You know, I bookmarked this, and I thought I had the right one. Oh. Okay, let's make it Isaiah 44. Isaiah 44. Oh, I'm sorry. Isaiah 42, verse 17. Isaiah 42, verse 17. Verse 17, they shall be turned back. They shall be greatly ashamed that trust in graven images, that say to the molten images, ye are our gods. Now Isaiah 44. Verse 13, the carpenter stretches out his rule. He marketh it out with a line. He fitteth it with planes. He marketh out with a compass. He maketh it after a figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man, that it may remain in the house. He heweth him down cedars, and taketh a cypress and the oak, which he strengtheneth for himself among the trees of the forest. He planteth an ash, and the rain doth nourish it. Then shall it be for a man to burn, and he will take thereof, and warm himself, yea, kindleth, and baketh bread. Yea, he maketh a god, and worship it, and maketh the graven image, and falleth down, thereto. He burneth part thereof the fire, and part thereof eateth flesh, and roasteth roast, and is satisfied, yea, and warmeth himself, and say, aha, I am warm, and I have seen the fire. And the residue thereof he maketh a god, even his graven image, and falleth down to it, unto it, and worshipeth it, and prayeth unto it, and saith, deliver me, for thou art my God. Let's take a look now in Romans 1. You'll see where I'm going. I've got a reason. I'm going there. Romans 1, verse 20. Very important passage for a creation science educator who's in the Bible. Romans 1, verse 20. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God. Neither were they thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, we're in verse 22, they became fools, and changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like unto bird, corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Verse 28, drop down to verse 28. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. I've been looking at all these verses on idolatry. And why? Worshipping idols. The Bible says that in Romans that they change the uncorruptible God into the image of corruptible things, like beasts and four-footed creatures and men and birds. And in Isaiah it says that he'll cut down a tree and make it into the image of a man and fall down and worship it. The rest of the tree he'll, you know, burn it up and use it to make his dinner, you know, or to make a chair. but he saves part of the wood and says it's a god. Well, he burns some other gods to make his dinner. You see how foolish that is. And you think, well, Dr. Jackson, what's the connection with the origin of life? And, not yet. Go ahead and put that up. And then that'll all the way. That'll give me control over it, I think. Oh, let's turn the on button. Yeah. Men's of power. Okay. When you go into a museum of natural history, and they got all these bones of monkeys we came from, and you'll see hanging up in a glass case a plastic model of a fish that we evolved from, and you'll see little polywogs, you know, that came from, and maybe you'll see some diagrams and charts that showed the little germ and amoeba things that came from. You go into a museum of natural history, if you're an atheist, it's your church. Standing there is a wax model of a monkey named Lucy that's supposed to be our mother. Sitting on a table is a brass model of a rat named Morganucodon, or Morgi for short, that they say is the mother of all mammals. Who does the Bible say is the mother of all? Eve is the mother of all humans living. But if you don't believe the Bible, or you say you believe the Bible and you go to church, but you believe in evolution and you think that our mother is a rat, our mother is a beast, our father is a fish, you've changed the uncorruptible God into the image of beasts and creeping things and worshipped the created versus the creator. God didn't make you. Behold the fish that is your father. Behold the rat that is your mother. Behold the slime that made you. Worship the fish. Worship the rat. If there's no God, that's perfect. If there's no God, that's exactly what you ought to do. Worship the fish that made us, because God didn't. It's an animal that made us. And the animals were made by the slime and by the sludge of the ocean. Mud turned into creatures, and creatures turned into us. And that's where we owe our life to, not to God. You might not think evolution is that vicious, but it is. It replaces God with the corruptible beasts and creeping things that the place of worship for the atheist says is really our father, our mother, our origin. It isn't God. It isn't in the beginning God created, but it's that it happened by itself. It's that important, more important than A1 steak sauce. Okay. It's that important. Well, the TV commercial says that. I'm trying to lighten it back up again. Some of you looked a little worried I was going to spit when I talked, especially you. You and him, yeah. Well, we'll talk to you guys later. You were way in the back before, and I recognize you. Okay. It's that bad, and it's idolatry. They're worshiping parts of the creation. Some people worship the stars and the sun and the moon. Some people worship the stump of a tree. If you're a druid, you worship trees, you know, and you believe in reincarnation. You might not eat cows because they could be a person or a fly. You don't step on a roach because it could be someone reincarnated. You see, those aren't stupid. They're wrong. If you believe the Bible, in the light of the Bible, it is foggy thinking. The origin of life without God, the origin of life by the theories of the evolutionists, is a highly improbable event, even by scientific standards. And I might say, especially by scientific standards. You think that only the Bible says that God made us? Only the Bible says evolution is impossible? Science says evolution is impossible. Science means knowledge. Wissenschaft in German, science in French, la ciencia in Spanish. Wissenschaft means knowledge craft. Science just means knowledge. If you do something in good conscience, you do it with knowledge. Full knowledge of what you're doing. Con, like chili con carne, is chili with meat. Conscience is with knowledge. With knowledge. Look, science just means knowledge. Science is an ultimate search for the big truths, the truths of the universe. Religion is a search for the truths of the universe. Science and religion used to go together. They were partners in tandem. They were companions on the road. Isaac Newton said, all of science is thinking God's thoughts after him. That's really what it's all about, trying to find out how the Creator did things and understand his creation, like you study a Rembrandt to learn the heart of the painter, the artist. We study nature, the creation, to learn more about the heart of the Creator. But somehow, about 200 years ago, the atheists started taking over science and claiming it was theirs alone, and that matters of faith have nothing to do with science. Well, that's hypocritical, because all of science is based on many faiths, many kinds of faithing, because as the existentialists and postmodernists say, nothing can be known, so it's faith. And we'll get more into that. But the topic today is about the origin of life. I like Calvin and Hobbes. Whoops, wrong one. Okay. It's this one. Here we go. Calvin and Hobbes. Here you go. How many of you like Calvin and Hobbes? I'm a big Calvin and Hobbes fan. Look at this. Here he goes. At 35,000 feet, the engines of Flight 430 explode for no reason. With plumes of dense smoke trailing from the wings, the giant aircraft plummets out of control. Meanwhile, a 50-car freight train hits a penny on the rail at 80 miles an hour and jumps the tracks, dragging 500,000 tons of metal into the air behind it. In a freak coincidence, both the jet and the train are converging on one spot, where tectonic plates in the Earth's crust have just begun to shift. That spot is the house of Farmer Brown, who, at this moment, is unaware of the gas leak as he attempts to light his stove. Calvin's great, isn't he? See, here's the train hopping the track, heading for his house. There's the earthquake fault, heading towards his house. Here's the airplane, heading towards his house. As he strikes the match, he casually glances out the kitchen window. His eye twitches involuntarily. And Hobbs goes, "Can't we play something else?" Well, six-year-old boys are sort of, you know, demento in their imaginations. The chance of this happening is actually, I think, better than the chance that chemicals in the ocean got there all by themselves, and that then they got together themselves and created bacteria. And then bacteria got themselves together and became giraffes and eagles and people. I mean, that is a whacked out religion, not science. There isn't a process that's been hypothesized by which this can actually happen. Oh, yeah, they say it's natural selection and mutation and even directed mutation and change over time. But those are just mealy-mouthed watchwords. They're catchphrases. The question is, how does that actually work? And then they got nothing, and they'll start to cuss at you and yell at you and tell you you're stupid or something because they don't know how it works or what process that goes along with known genetics, with known biology, with known science and chemistry and physics, because no process does go with those things. It's very faith-based. They just believe it. Well, thanks to Bob, I'll get some quotes from famous scientists admitting this. But the textbooks don't admit it, or very rarely. And certainly the specials on the Animal Planet and History Channel, why didn't the History Channel just stick to George Washington? No, they've always got to do something about the Big Bang or about Darwin and about how we came from monkeys. It's really getting to where everywhere now. You just can't go anywhere with it. Look at this. Robert Jastrow, a very famous evolutionist, said in 1977, according to this story, he's talking about evolution, every blade of grass and every creature in the sea and on the land evolved out of one parent strand of molecular matter drifting lazily in a warm pool. What concrete evidence supports that remarkable theory of the origin of life? There is none. I know that's an old quote, but I got quotes from the 2000s that say the same thing. You know why they're not finding the answer? Because there's not one. It's a scientific impossibility. Not because we haven't discovered it yet, but because we've already discovered things that say it cannot happen. You see, I'm not talking out of lack of knowledge and they're working on it. I'm talking about things we already know mean this can't happen. Let's see. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. This is good. My friend John Hefner in Texas gave me this slide. The idea that life arose from some evil soup is now being modified, and most evolutionists now believe life originated in the rocks and minerals of the early Earth. And these rocks and minerals dissolved in the ocean and collected on volcanic vents at the bottom of the ocean, or they collected in ocean water, and the minerals that were dissolved from the rocks of the Earth became you. I'm not kidding. That's how the story goes. I took a little jump there, and they don't like it when I take that jump because that shows up the story to be stupid. They don't like it when I make that jump. No, Dr. Jackson, you've got to let the story have time for the deception to work. You can't be telling people we came from rocks, but that's what the story really says. The non-believers are saying to a tree, "You are my father," and to a stone, "You gave birth to me." It's idolatry. It's idolatry. Always, always the pagans have worshipped the creation. The creation is awesome. It does inspire awe. The Grand Canyon inspires awe. Everest inspires awe. A baby being born inspires awe. But do we worship mountains? Do we worship the sun? Do we worship the stars? Some people do. Do we worship a stump of a tree? Some people do. Say to a rock, "You gave birth to me." Well, the thing made say to him that made it, "You made me not"? Shall that thing framed say to him that framed it, He had no understanding. That's also in Jeremiah. I have that memorized. Because, no, it's in Isaiah, because I lost my presentation, but luckily I knew it. But that's a good verse too. Shall the thing made say to him that made it, you didn't make me, you didn't have any understanding? That's what evolution, that's what atheists have got to do. They've got to say to God, you didn't do it, and you don't know how, because you're not real. You're the Easter Bunny. I made you up. Let's see. Actually, the presentation that I gave at Cadre is way too long for a Sunday morning with a bunch of non-Cadre people, so that's why I'm going to skip some stuff. Okay. But 2005, in the journal Elements, at present, there is no completely satisfactory theory for the origin of life. 2005, pretty recent. Creationists are always accused of using old quotes. Well, there's a relatively new one. And any evolutionist knows that what I'm saying is true. They really never have figured out that. I wanted to do one more thing here. Evolution. Look, this is actually at the front of the exhibit on evolution at the museum in Chicago, the Chicago Field Museum. Look at what it says. Evolution is one of science's best supported theories. That's the headline, and you're really not supposed to read the rest. But let's, I thought I had it. Okay, here we go. Let's read the rest. So what is a theory exactly? I love it when they start throwing smoke screens all over everything. What is a theory anyway? You know, I was debating an evolutionist at Stephen F. Austin University in Texas just last semester, and right in the middle of me telling the audience that my opponent believed that eagles came from worms, another professor in the audience said, "Oh, Dr. Jackson, but what is a worm anyway, after all?" And I'm like, "It's a worm. Everybody knows what a worm is, okay? You know, they're trying to go, what do we mean by worm? You know, I just said worm. Everybody in the audience knew what I was talking about, fish and worms. They got an idea in their head what a worm is. But he wanted to cloud the issue and make it complicated. Look, when someone's trying to lie, that's what they do, isn't it? That's what they do, isn't it? If a crooked car salesman, I'm sure anyone that's a car salesman in here are not crooked, they'll just throw all these papers at you. Crooked real estate agent, throw all these papers at you. Crooked loan agent, throw these loan papers at you and just sign it, just sign it. Well, what's that mean there? Oh, it means all, they'll just give you all this gobbledygook that you can't understand, and you'll go, rather than admit you're too stupid to know what it means, you go, so I sign it here, right? Yeah, that's right. See, they're wanting you to sign there without knowing what they're really talking about. And it's not like they're lying, all of them. Some of them, that's how the teacher taught it to them in school, and so they pretended they understood it too. And they pretended that they understood it because they thought the teacher would respect them more then. The teacher never really knew why it was true either or had any proof, but everybody's pretending it's like the emperor's new clothes. How many know the story of the emperor's new clothes? Yeah. And only smart people can see the clothes. That's the hogwash that goes along with this whole thing. So what is a theory exactly? Well, scientists use the word a bit differently. For an explanation to be a valid scientific theory, it has to be supported by what? Evidence. Well, any new evidence puts a theory to the test. If the evidence doesn't support the theory is modified or rejected. Well, so far, I think this is true for science. All the available evidence, which includes fossils, comparative anatomy, and DNA, supports the theory of evolution. Now they've gotten to the That's the dream. That's the fantasy. That's not science. It's not even true. It's actually a lie. All the evidence. Every scientist alive would admit no theory has all the evidence in its favor. They're doing what's called hurling elephants at you. Everybody believes this. Nobody who's a scientist doesn't believe it. All the scientists never exaggerate like that. These are, politicians. This is political and indoctrination. This is not education. You're not invited to think or even to learn. You're invited to become indoctrinated, and that's all this is trying to do. All the evidence, which includes blah, 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 supports the theory of evolution as the scientific explanation for the rich diversity of life on Earth. They think they're okay because when they say scientific, they mean drop the Bible out of it, and suddenly by magic it becomes scientific now, see? And yet the Bible predicted vitamin K peaking on the eighth day of life, the deep ocean currents, which Benjamin Franklin used as the first postmaster general of the United States. Many things in the Bible predicted scientifically before we finally discovered that the earth hangeth upon nothing, which sounded stupid and crazy 3,000 years ago, but guess what? The earth hangs on nothing. I mean, the ancient Greeks thought Atlas held the earth, and the Hindus thought that these elephants were holding it up, and they stood on a turtle, and that all made sense to them. But the Hebrew idea that the earth was on nothing was insane. Guess what? It turned out to be true. The Bible's always been true about these things. Drop the Bible, and that is the definition of science? Yeah, I know the Bible's not a science book, but whenever it mentions science, it's reliable. Paul Davies, he's always on National Geographic or in many journals. Here he's in the journal New Scientist saying about the origin of life that we're talking about today. Well, we have a rough idea when it began on Earth and some interesting theories about the where. But the how part has everyone what? Stumped. And this is a very honest guy. I like Paul Davies because he's not trying to hide anything. He says, well, we just don't know. Nobody knows how lifeless chemicals organize themselves into the first living cell. And that's 2003. By the way, it's my birthday, so I considered that a birthday present to me from Paul Davies, from Dr. Davies, very well physicist. Look, you can believe life evolved if you want, that it came from chemicals, but not because you think anybody has ever figured out how it happened or whether it happened. Nobody has. You can believe that if you want, but don't say you got science on your side. Don't say this book is wrong because science goes against it. That's just not true. It's never been true, and it isn't ever going to be true. I have students who take internet classes from me, and we'll have these discussions in science class, and these are at two Christian colleges, the Hillsdale College and Liberty University, which is Jerry Falwell's school. I teach internet classes for both those schools, and I have students say to me, well, Dr. Jackson, and they think they're being brave and bold to say, I don't care what scientific facts comes up, I'm still going to believe the Bible. And I have to rebuke them for that. You don't care what scientific fact comes up? Jesus said, the what will set you free. Truth. Look, brothers, sisters, we're all about truth here. We're not all about encouraging children to believe myths and lies. We're not about giving people false comfort. We're about the side of the rock. We're about the truth that sets us free. We should be courageous for truth and pursue it. Disagrees with our most cherished doctrines. But I'll tell you one thing, truth, scientific fact, is never going to contradict the Bible, so you don't have to worry about that happening. And if you are worried about it, well, I've tried for 37 years and haven't found any problem with it. Those problems are rumors, urban myths. By the way, the Bible does not miscalculate pi as 3.0. If you actually read the verse carefully, it does come out to 3.14159. It does actually work. There's all kinds of myths that people have put around about the Bible being wrong about this or that or the other. But it's them. It's them that are guessing, not you. We're right. We can afford to be dogmatic. Let's see. The 1600s, a great scientist named Francesco Redi disproved spontaneous generation. Spontaneous generation is a big word for generation means making things like Genesis, and spontaneous means, you know, on its own. Spontaneous just happened. So the just happening of life, spontaneous generation of life. How many ever heard those words, spontaneous generation? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. They teach it to you. One of the first things they teach you in biology class in high school and in college, that spontaneous generation was disproved by Francesco Redi. He did a little experiment because people used to think that flies, just maggots, came from rotten meat. And that's how flies came to be. Maggots turned into flies, they knew, but they thought meat just made maggots. So he said, no, flies are laying their eggs on maggots. So what he did was he took this paper and tied a string around a jar. This is 400 years ago, but they had that technology. Okay. Put a meat in the jar, and then covered it with paper, and nothing happened, no flies. He left it open, and there were flies and catching from maggots. And then he put cheesecloth and tied it around the top, and the maggots appeared on the cheesecloth because the flies laid their eggs on the paper because it smelled like meat, and they thought on the cheesecloth they thought it was the meat. So he proved, you know, flies don't come from meat. They come from eggs from flies, which is what the Bible says. Kinds reproducing after their kind. That's what the Bible says. Now, years later, 200 years later, the great chemist Louis Pasteur did a similar experiment. And he invented pasteurization. Pasteurization is named after the French name Pasteur. It doesn't have anything to do with milk coming from cows who are out in a pasture. Everybody thinks that. Okay. He did an experiment with soup broths, with some Campbell's chicken noodle soup, and he put the soup broth in a container and boiled it to kill all the germs, and then he left it open. He had these different shaped nozzles on it. They were open to the air. He had one was tilted, and there was a little bit of soup that got down in here, and he left this one here open, and he found that the soup did not rot from germs rotting the soup unless the bacteria could touch. It was hard for the bacteria to float with the air currents through this little job here to get down in here and rot the soup, so it never rotted. He left it open to the air, but it was difficult. The bacteria, he was proving that germs made germs. Soup didn't make germs. The French Academy of Sciences in the 1800s, about the time of our Civil War, never will the doctrine of spontaneous generation recover from the mortal blow of my simple experiment. No, there is now no circumstance known in which it can be affirmed that microscopic beings came into the world without germs, without parents similar to themselves. He killed spontaneous generation. But Darwin said, it happened. I was talking to the vice president of the Darwin Coalition at the Darwin Day Festival at University of Tennessee, Knoxville, 1 year, about 6 years ago. And Dr. Cruzan and I were just chatting, and he said, I don't see how you can believe what you believe. So we discussed that. And I said, well, I don't see how you can believe what you believe. You believe in spontaneous generation. He goes, no, we don't. I said, yes, you do. You believe it happened at least once, don't you? That life made itself from chemicals floating in the ocean, bacteria formed themselves. Spontaneous generation of life. All evolutionists believe in that, but they hate it when you say that. Just say that Darwin was hateful racism ever since. That either, because it's politically incorrect. George Wald, a Harvard Nobel Prize-winning scientist in 1954, and the trainer of Stephen Jay Gould, one of the most famous evolutionists of the 20th century, said this in Scientific American magazine in 1954. And I told you evolutionists accuse us of using old quotes, but evolutionists quote from this very same article all the time, so I'm going to quote from it. This is fair. Look at what Dr. Wald said. There are only two possibilities at how life arose. One is spontaneous generation, arising to evolution. The other is a supernatural creative act of God. There is no third possibility. Spontaneous generation, that life arose from non-living matter, was scientifically disproved 120 years ago by Louis Pasteur and others. That leaves us with the only possible conclusion that life arose as a supernatural creative act of God. Look what he says. That's the same quote. I will not accept that. I will not accept that philosophically because I do not want to believe in God. Therefore, I choose to believe in that which I know is scientifically impossible. Spontaneous generation arising to evolution. They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. Their foolish heart darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and worshipped the creation rather than the Creator. It's completely foretold by the Bible. I choose to believe in the impossible because I do not want to believe in God. They did not like to retain God in their knowledge. Dr. Wald is saying it himself. And whether they said in those same words or not, every evolutionist is feeling that way, and every atheist must feel that way. How many of you ever seen this textbook? You ever seen this high school biology textbook? Yes, there's a couple of you. Okay, there you go. Well, you've seen it in our office, Aaron. That's true. It's the most famous biology textbook, the 2000 edition of Prentice Hall Biology by Miller, Kenneth Miller and Joseph Levine. In the book, early on page 13 here, it tells us about Louis Pasteur. His work convinced other scientists that the hypothesis of spontaneous generation was not correct. In other words, Pasteur showed all living things come from other what? Living things. Then later, it says here, in 1855, the German physician Rudolf Virchow, and also Schleiden and Schwann, concluded new cells could only be produced from the division of existing what? Life. Cells come from cells. This is called the cell theory. Sometimes it's called the cell law. New cells are produced only from existing cells. Life comes from life. And yet, later in the same book, The Puzzle of Life's Origins, a stew of organic molecules is a long way from a living cell, and the leap from life is the greatest gap in the scientific hypotheses of Earth's early history. Geologic evidence suggests about 200 to 300 million years after the Earth cooled enough to carry liquid water, cells similar to modern bacteria were common. How might these cells have originated? He doesn't say possible leap. He says the leap. The leap. The leap from non-life to life, he's already saying it happened. Now, how is the mystery? That is faith. Faith flying in the face of what science has already condemned, what science has already proven never, ever could possibly happen in the minds of any thinking scientist. It's a law. The cell law says cells come from cells. Spontaneous generation says life can come from non-life. But the shutting down of spontaneous generation was replaced by the law of biogenesis, which means life generates life. Biogenesis, life making. The law of biogenesis is called the cornerstone of modern biology. No evolutionist really believes the cornerstone of modern biology because they don't believe that the law of biogenesis is really a law because they believe life can come from non-life. It's an article of faith that it did. And they don't like to talk about that. Most scientists abhor spontaneous generation, much less the wave of a magic wand from God, or the inheritance of living organisms from outer space. A lot of evolutionists have gotten around this by saying aliens made us. But then you got to find out who made the aliens. So you still have a problem. They just put it way out there. I quoted Will Rogers in the Sunday school when he said, "Scientists get bigger and bigger reputations the more they talk about things you can't check on." So saying that aliens made us just puts the problem way out there where we can't even test it or think about or imagine what life is, what the situation is like on another planet. So maybe evolution could have happened there, but it couldn't happen on Earth. The chemical steps that led to life on Earth remain a matter of intense speculation. That's 2005. How many ever seen this apparatus in a science book before? Yeah, I have. Every high school and biology, high school and college biology textbook has the picture of that. But look at what Dr. Miller admits in his book. Scientists now know that Miller and Urey's original simulations of Earth's early atmosphere were not accurate. Were not accurate. Actually, one of the big things is there's one gas in the atmosphere missing in this little gas chamber when they tried to say this was the way that the Earth's atmosphere was when life was created by chance. Passing through sparks through a mixture of hydrogen, methane, ammonia, and water vapor. What's missing? Oxygen's missing. Stanley Miller, who made that experiment, said in 1974, 20 years after he became world famous for that experiment, the synthesis of compounds of biological interest takes place only under reducing conditions, which means no oxygen. There's oxidation and reduction. How many ever heard of oxidation reduction reactions? Yeah, there's only one or the other. If you got oxygen or oxidizing compounds, it's an oxidizing atmosphere. If you have none of those things, then it's a reducing atmosphere. And biology reactions that are hypothesized, postulated, as you said, brother, earlier, that word, postulated to how life could start itself. All of their suggestions depend on there being no oxygen present. And how do they know the Earth's atmosphere didn't have oxygen? Oh, well, like you said, Joe, how did evolutionists believe plants first came into being? Well, see, they think that there was no oxygen on the Earth until the plants got here to make the oxygen. Well, how do they know that? You know, plants do breathe oxygen at night. During the day, they make it, and at night, they breathe it. So your house plants are getting back at you at night. They breathe it in during the night, and then they breathe it, they release oxygen during the day. Only while there's sunshine and they're photosynthesizing, do they make oxygen. And it's kind of like a byproduct. It's kind of like belching. They're just burping, you know, because it's just a byproduct of making glucose. They're trying to make tree sap and maple syrup, and, you know, they burp out some oxygen. But that's good for us because we like it. So us and the plants get along pretty good. Look at this. In 1982, they knew this was a problem. With oxygen in the air, the first amino acid. Yeah, that's what all proteins are made of. Your body is mostly proteins and fuel cells. Protein is what you're made of. And all your hormones and enzymes and your structural compounds are proteins. A few things aren't, like the apatite mineral in your tooth enamel and the calcium carbonate in your bones, but your bones are full of cartilage and all that's made out of amino acids. That's protein. With oxygen in the air, the first amino acid would never have gotten started. But without oxygen, it would have been wiped out by cosmic rays. I wonder if oxygen protects us from cosmic rays. What part of the air protects us from cosmic rays? The what layer? The ozone layer. The oxygen you're breathing is O2. Ozone is O3. If the Earth started with no oxygen, it started with no O3. If it started with no O3, it started with no ozone layer, and the ultraviolet rays, cosmic rays from space, would have destroyed any molecules. All amino acids would have been dispelted and destroyed, sterilized by ultraviolet and other kinds of rays, gamma rays from space. And they know this is a problem. They know it's a problem. As the other guy said, it's a catch-22. If we have oxygen, we have no organic compounds. If we don't have oxygen, we don't have them either. This is a totally, totally contradicting roadblock to evolutionary thinking. And they know it. And they talk about it in textbooks all the time, but they never tell you they never found an answer for it. They're at C-free oxygen. To the first cells, oxygen was a deadly poison. But there's all kinds of evidence that there was. The only trend in recent literature is the suggestion of far more oxygen in the early atmosphere than anyone imagined, any evolutionist imagined, because the Bible said God made the expanse between the waters. He made the waters above and the waters below, and the fowl of the air flew in the heavens. And then on the sixth day after that, God made man. So there was plenty of oxygen in the earth from the very start. The Bible says that. Science is just a little slow on the uptake sometimes. You know, 15 years ago, science discovered that men and women's brains are different. Anyone that's ever been in a relationship knows that. The science is just a little slow on these things. It's only because we knew, but we didn't have any proof. And then we finally had proof that the wiring is different. So we're good at thinking about some tasks better if you're a male and female. That's Stanley Miller. He was just a little grad student at University of Chicago when he made his famous experiment replacing God with these chemicals and lightning zapping the chemicals in the air, and that's really God instead of God making us. It was the lightning bolt that made the chemicals come together. But don't forget, his experiment in 1953 depended on no oxygen being present, and now we know that's just not true. That's another diagram of his famous apparatus, and you see them in textbooks all the time. Miller just died a few years ago, and he stuck with his theory the whole time. He's not a stupid man. He's smart, but wrong. How many of you know smart people can be wrong? Yeah, yeah. And don't forget, there's a supernatural effect happening now that if they don't like to retain God in their knowledge, professing themselves to be wise, they become fools, and God gives them over to a reprobate mind. this man had a good brain, very interesting, intelligent theorist, but his mind was reprobate. But you have the mind of Christ. Your mind has been renewed, and you've not been given this spirit of fear, but of love and of power and of a... It's a fill-in-the-blank question. Sound mind. Good. Oh, Alan, you've been teaching them for a second. I thought they were choking. Okay. Let's see. Too complicated. Oh, there's Miller near the end of his life arguing with Robert Hazen, who believed that at the bottom of the ocean life began, not in the air. Hazen's a very interesting guy. He taught at George Mason University, where I got three of my degrees. Also, I used Hazen's textbook as his book, Science Matters, as a textbook in a class I taught in Vermont. He's a smart guy. I just didn't believe the chapter on evolution, that's all. But look at what Robert Hazen said just 6 years ago. Scientists are still far from understanding the ancient intricate processes that led to the origin of life. And Harold Morowitz, who also teaches at George Mason University, were the lead researchers on the newest theories on the evolutionary origin of life. And Hazen says, we're still far from understanding that. The guys on the cutting edge of research in the evolutionist community will tell you we are far from understanding how it happened. But that's not what most of your freshman-level biology professors and high school biology teachers will tell you. They'll say, stupid Christian, science is for evolutionists. Kind of like tricks are for kids, the rabbit. You know. They'll say that to you. But the guys they're trusting will admit, we don't really know at this point. Oh, Alan, when am I supposed to end? Don't do that. That's a mistake. You can tell I'm chatty. Oh, winding it down. Okay. It's true. I did hit a lot of the heights on this. But they will tell you. They're the first, the honest ones. The guys like Hazen. I really like, I did not ever meet him, but I like the book and I like the articles that I've read that he's written. He's honest. I mean, he believes in evolution, but he's not trying to lie to people. He'll say stuff like this. Most of them won't. The indoctrinators won't. This guy's on the research edge, and he says, we haven't got this solved yet. Don't believe it when people tell you. Don't worry about that, how life got started. We got that sewed up. No, we don't. He says, we don't. Maybe Hazen will come to the knowledge of the truth later. How many ever heard of Watson? Guys who had discovered, or at least invented, the double helix twisted ladder structure for the DNA molecule. Well, look at what Sir Francis Crick said. He said that it's very clear that evolution simply cannot happen, no matter how long one is prepared to wait. Evolution is statistically impossible. Now, he ended up believing that aliens made us, but instead of believing in God. Eugenie Scott is the head of the National Center for Science Education, a hate creationist club. I've met Dr. Scott. She is smart and mean. That's a bad combination. But Dr. Scott was being interviewed by John Gibson on Fox News, along with Stephen Meyer, a leader in the intelligent design movement. And the host asked, does theory of evolution answer, for instance, how life got started, Dr. Scott? And she says, no. But that's not what evolution is all about. Evolution is the inference that living things had common ancestors. The origin of life is a completely separate problem. Creationists like to confuse the two, because they like to look at the origin of life as the soft underbelly of evolution. Well, if it's completely separate, then why, in this book called Understanding Evolution, on chapter 14, why does it have this thing about formation of Earth, chemical evolution, organic evolution, and then heterotrophs, other feeding, they eat each other, prokaryotic cells that don't have a nucleus, autotrophs that feed themselves with photosynthesis, then eukaryotes that have a nucleus, and then multicellular things, and other single-celled animals. Why major events in chemical evolution preceded biological evolution? The first self-replicating life forms were heterotrophs. Oxygen began to accumulate in the atmosphere. It seems to me that the origin of life is step one in the evolution story. It's always the formation of small molecules was the first step toward the origination of a cell from which other life forms evolve. This is a college biology textbook. Every biology textbook says that the origin of life is step one in the evolution story. Dr. Scott is pretending that she doesn't know that. She's smart. I've met her. I know she knows this. But she was pretending not to know. Am I wrapping up pretty good here, there, brother? See, aliens did it. We were made by Invader Zim. Oh, here's a good one. The director of the observatory at the Vatican before this guy said, creationism is a kind of paganism. Well, I don't know. They say he retired early. Maybe he got fired by the Pope for saying that. But then the new director of the Vatican Observatory in 2008 said this. The Bible, Jose Gabriel Funes, the Bible is not a science book. I get so tired of hearing that. You know, math books aren't science books either, but when they mention science, we trust it. History books aren't science books either, but when it mentions science, we trust it. The Bible's not deliberately a science book, but when anything that happens to be in it is trustworthy. He says, God is the creator of the universe. Well, he's right about that. And that we are not the result of chance. Well, at least he's on to something. But the fact that he says the Bible is not a science book should be a little red flag to you that he's unfaithful. I'm not saying this guy's not saved. He might be. But he's mistaken about the Bible. The first time you take any verse in here and put a question mark after it, you've begun, you know, once the dark side controls your destiny, it will forever. You know, once you start down that slippery slope, now you must put a question mark after every other verse in the Bible if you decide to put one around any of them. Or you're a hypocrite. If you decide to question one verse, now you better question the rest. Or you're a damned hypocrite. If I say it that way, it's not cussing, right? It's scripture. You're a hypocrite if you only question certain verses and not all of them. If you want to question, in the beginning God created, fine. But now you've got to question that a child should be born of a virgin. Because that's scientifically impossible too. And you've got to question, and he came to them walking on the water. Because that's scientifically impossible too. And he made a spittle in the mud and placed it on the blind man's eyes. And he went and washed in the pool of Siloam and he saw. That's scientifically impossible too. Just like in the beginning God created. We call these things miracles. That was a partial fill in the blank question. We call these things miracles. And only a miracle-making God could do it. And only a miracle-making God could make life. And they believe in a miracle without a miracle-making God. Which faith actually makes sense to you? Miracles with a miracle-maker or miracles without them? Just logically, the preponderance of logic goes on the side that there is a miracle maker. Because according to everything we know about the universe, not only have we not discovered how life could start, we have discovered it can't. But it doesn't stop them from their ultimate faith in unbelief. And it can't. Don't be too hard on these people intellectually. I was once not saved. I believed in evolution. What else could I believe in? My mother was a secretary working at NASA. She took dictation from Carl Sagan once. You know, I was a little Jimmy Neutron, you know, little midget Bill Nye the Science Guy, you know, type kid. And I grew up believing in evolution, and I always wanted to be a science teacher, and I did become a science teacher, but not before I got saved first. So I never did teach evolution as a fact. Oh, I taught it. I taught creation, too. And I taught them both. And discussed it with the students. Until evolution goes away, like the flat earth theory, we will need to discuss it in science classes, even in our Christian schools. I'm against the SAT 9 Christian school version, because that SAT test doesn't mention evolution. We're not about ignorance. Paul understood the pagan ideas around him in his world. He said, hey, you know that temple you got to the unknown God? Let me tell you about him. He plied with wisdom his knowledge of the pagan beliefs around him. And so can we. So can we. But it will take the wisdom of God. Wisdom beyond what I've got. And so I have to trust him like you do. You're not going to have to debate college professors like I do. You're going to have to talk to your next door neighbor over the gossip fence in the backyard. You know, or when you're shoveling snow in a couple of days, cracking ice off your driveway. It was 76 yesterday, but we'll be cracking ice when it gets down to 4 on Tuesday. Well, while you're out there cracking ice and yelling to your neighbor, hey, neighbor, you know, that's the kind of people you'll be talking to. Maybe you'll have to talk to a professor someday, you know. God will give you the grace then when you're called. Jesus said, when you are called before the magistrates and rulers, think not what you ought to say, but the Holy Spirit will teach you in that hour what to say. That's how I win the debates. You can see me debating people on YouTube and on the internet, and you can see, I mean, I come off as some kind of, you know, blasé genius who, oh, bored, the evolutionist is so stupid. Well, what about that? I come off that way, but that's because I have an unusual amount of the peace of God at that time. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed upon thee. Why? Because he trusteth in thee. It's the only way I found out to win debates is to trust God during them. And then his wisdom guides how I use my knowledge. I have more knowledge in science than, well, I guess anyone else in the room. Maybe more than everybody combined, I don't know. But I depend on the wisdom of God how to use that knowledge. But even you, with a little bit of knowledge, a midget with a dagger can kill a giant with a sword. Skill. Does any lack wisdom? Let him ask of God, who giveth freely and upbraideth not. In quietness and confidence will be your strength. All you need is a little bit of confidence and lean on the wisdom of the Lord. And you can talk with college professors as a student or as a colleague or as a friend across the gossip fence behind your yard, like Wheezy and Louise and what was in Snuffy Smith? What was her? Elviney was her neighbor. They used to talk over the gossip. You'll be all right, because you're actually right. The book is true, as Brother Nicholas told us earlier today in Sunday school. The book is true. It's just that simple. Lies are complicated. The truth is just that simple. You can trust it. And if you want to get on my email list, it's free. Just come up and put your email here, and I'll guide you to the websites whenever I have a new video or a article. And they're very short. The videos are like 2 minutes long. The articles are like 5 sentences long to just tell you the scoop on some new evolutionist triumph in the world of science, like that monkey that's walking upright this week and like that gas cloud making new stars. I let you know the creation side of the story, and it's free. It doesn't cost anything. It's a service. It's a ministry. It's what I do to the holy faith that's in the household of faith and you all. And my cards are here, too. Thank you. Thank you, Brother Allen.